Welcome to the Bullpen Report on the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm Red Fox Roto, Dan Thompson. Today is Saturday, April 18th, which means it's a Fab preview day. And if you've seen anything from this week in closers and saves, it's been traumatic. This is one of those weeks where I wish this were the shortstop report. And we still have the weekend games to create even more chaos and blood in the streets. So let's hit the news and notes, and then we'll finish with the week's drops and waiver targets. We're trying to move quickly. We're going over 15 minutes today because there's a lot to cover. And we'll start in Chicago, where the Cubs placed their closer, Daniel Palencia, on the injured list with an oblique injury. He joins Phil Maton and Hunter Harvey on the injured list, so the Cubs are light on closing options at the back of their bullpen. Ben Brown is their most intriguing arm that remains healthy, but he's thrown no less than two innings in all of his appearances, so he doesn't seem like he'd make a perfect transition to a one-inning closer role. But the Cubs are loaded with left-handed relievers, so I could see a scenario where Caleb Thielbar or Hobie Milner, where they start the eighth against a lefty or a couple lefties, and then Brown comes in to get four or five outs, through the end of the game. Now, it's likely that the left-handed Caleb Thielbar will also be a factor in the late innings. I just don't see a single pitcher that we need to prioritize here on the Cubs. Now, in Houston, there was some important news that came out of Houston. The Astros moved Josh Hader to the 60-day IL, which pushes back his possible return until at least late May. It had looked like, if you were very optimistic, that he could return in about 2 to 3 weeks, but that's now over a month away, more like 5-6 weeks. Brian Abreu has more time, technically, to earn his way back into the ninth inning. But he allowed a three-run homer while the Astros were already losing last night. I don't see Abreu returning to save ops anytime soon. So in the meantime, anyone who holds shares of Brian King can continue to do so. And Eniel De Los Santos becomes a cheaper target just to see if he keeps getting chances. De Los Santos has the last two Houston saves, so maybe he's allowed to continue in that role and get a portion of the save opportunities moving forward. Now, as a deeper spec, Bennett Souza is on a rehab assignment. He's pitched twice. He's looked good. He has four strikeouts, just one walk allowed over two innings. Souza was excellent for the Astros last year. He probably wouldn't slide straight into the ninth inning, so he'd be several weeks even from potential saves. But in deep leagues, yeah, maybe not a bad stash. Now for the Angels, Jordan Romano picked a bad week to blow a few saves and allow his first five earned runs of the season. Now last night, Romano bounced back with a scoreless inning, three strikeouts. It was a non-save situation. And honestly, he's been really good outside of those consecutive ugly blown saves this week. So he may yet have some life in the ninth. But Kirby Yates began his rehab assignment last night. Of course, there's no guarantees, but the healthy return of Kirby Yates could push Jordan Romano, once he's back. Yates isn't a high priority stash at the moment, but he's someone we can think about starting to add as we watch Romano closely this week. Now, staying in LA, Edwin Diaz hasn't pitched since April 10th. His velocity had been down. The team was concerned enough that they held him out of game action to throw a bullpen session instead earlier this week. But he was supposed to appear in that first series and didn't. At this point, I don't know what Dave Roberts is waiting for. If you want to see Edwin Diaz throw in a game, put him in. It's been 8 days. He needs game action to stay sharp and for the team and for us to know that his velo, his health are cooperating. Right now, all we can do is wait, but at least the news has been trending positive. In Milwaukee, possibly the most impactful news of the week for fantasy purposes comes from the Brewers bullpen. Trevor Megill had a bad week. Last Friday, he allowed the 4 earned runs without recording an out, blown save against the Nationals. Now, despite those awful results, that the damage was largely done on 3 bunts wasn't hugely concerning at the time. But 4 days later, on Tuesday this week, Megill allowed 3 more earned runs on 3 hits and a walk against Toronto, blowing his 2nd consecutive save. Now, after the game, manager Pat Murphy said the team would have to consider a change in the 9th inning. That was pretty obvious. But in other quotes since, Murphy has been seemingly defensive of Megill and the crowd booing him, saying, you know, these guys aren't machines. So it does feel like Murphy's kind of in Megill's corner. But the worst possible scenario for Megill and his fantasy owners was to have the Brewers immediately generate another save chance for Abner Uribe to convert. And that's exactly what happened on Wednesday night. So is there now a closer controversy in Milwaukee? Is Megill out of the job? Is it now Uribe's job? Well, maybe not entirely. On Thursday, the Brewers again held a slim lead late in the game. Trevor Megill got thrown right back into high leverage. He pitched the 8th inning. He faced the 9-1-2 hitters for the Blue Jays. He struck out 2 in a perfect inning. And then with Abner Uribe unavailable, Angel Zerpa got the 9th inning save. So if you own Trevor Megill, it's good news after the bad news. It was great to see him pitching the 8th again so quickly. It was good that Abner Uribe wasn't able to get 2 quick save chances in a row. But last night, Uribe got the 9th in a tie game. So that's typically when the closer is used in those situations. So that is good for Uribe and bad for Megill. Now, Uribe walked a couple batters, which has been a problem for him in the past, but he didn't allow a run, kept the game tied. The Brewers scored 3 in the 10th. So Trevor Megill got the save chance. And he did convert with a couple of strikeouts. He allowed the auto runner to score, and Liam Hicks did hit a 2-out double. It wasn't a totally clean inning, but it was a save, and that might matter. If you have Megill, you hold him. He's still right there. He's close. If you have Uribe, temper your excitement. I don't think you suddenly have a full-time closer, but Uribe should be in the lead for at least a short while. Now, if either pitcher is available on your waiver wire, Uribe, of course, the most likely, unless someone rage dropped Megill in a daily league. These guys are both worth adding and rostering to see how this plays out over the next week or two. Right now, we move to Pittsburgh. On Tuesday's episode, I talked about how Dennis Santana was in the lead in Pittsburgh when many thought it was still Gregory Soto. Santana got a save Wednesday, set up by Soto. Last night, Gregory Soto again pitched the 8th ahead of Santana, who didn't get a save chance this time because the Pirates scored a couple runs to make it a 4-run lead. But it's clear, at least for now, that Santana is the primary closer. Though Gregory Soto has his role, he will get an occasional save. It's matchup-based for Soto, though. Soto is not the closer. Now, in Sacramento, Joel Cunell is up to 3 saves on the season, including his last 2 appearances, last Sunday and on Wednesday this week. The A's bullpen is a messy situation, though. Their home park is unforgiving. I still don't recommend chasing saves in Sacramento. And Cunell, he's a 31-year-old journeyman. He's got a career ERA over 5, strikeout rate under 20%. He's really just a desperation play. But if you're thinking about bidding on Cunell, keep it low. To San Francisco now, where I was eagerly awaiting a game where the Giants got into the 7th inning with a lead so we could see how Joe Vitello would use his bullpen in that scenario. We hadn't seen that since late March. What finally happened on Thursday with a 3-run lead, it was Ryan Walker getting the 7th inning. But it was against Sal Stewart and the Reds' 4, 5, 6 hitters. And Walker retired all three with a strikeout. Keaton Wynn then got the eighth inning against the bottom of the Reds' order, and he retired all three with two strikeouts. The Caleb Killian stands must have been disappointed when it was lefty Eric Miller brought on for the ninth inning save opportunity. Miller walked Matt McClain, but he struck out the other three batters he faced and got the save. Now, I want to avoid drawing any definitive conclusions from this one game, but based on at least this single point of data we have, here's I think what we can say. Ryan Walker is ahead of Keaton Wynn on the leverage ladder. He was given the tougher part of the Reds' order, even though he appeared earlier in the game. But Walker's clearly not the full-time closer. I mean, we already knew that. And that obviously hurts his fantasy value. He really hasn't been used consistently in the eighth, ninth inning since March. Now, we know Keaton Wynn is firmly in that late inning mix. That should result in an occasional save opportunity, but probably not enough to warrant adding him as a priority. And Eric Miller is in a similar position as the bullpen's top lefty. I doubt he assumes the primary closer role, but he should get his chances as well. So based on the evidence we have right now, San Francisco is unfortunately a closer by committee bullpen until further notice. And for you Caleb Killian fans, he threw the eighth inning last night with a four-run lead. He's getting closer to high leverage. He's just not quite there yet. Now we move on to Tampa, where I've repeated many times that the Rays are a committee, but it seems I need to add the disclaimer when everyone is healthy, and that is not the case right now. Edwin Uceta apparently had a setback with his shoulder issue while on his rehab assignment, so his potential return has been delayed. We don't know for how long. Garrett Clevenger is already on the IL. Griffin Jack still isn't getting outs consistently. He's likely weeks away from earning himself back into the high leverage. So with so many obstacles falling away in front of him, Brian Baker has stepped into the primary closer job in Tampa. He has four saves in the past 12 days. And it seems he'll have some time now to stay in that role. Now in Texas, a lot has been said about the situation in Texas. So let's see what's happened there since the last pod on Tuesday. Chris Martin went on the IL. He was no longer fantasy relevant anyway. Robert Garcia pitched Tuesday night while the Rangers were behind, so he's firmly out of the late innings for now. On Wednesday, Cole Wynn entered the game in the sixth inning while tied. He allowed a home run in that inning, came back out for the seventh, allowed another homer, three runs in total. So advantage Jake Junis, right? Well, maybe not. On Thursday, Junis came on in the seventh inning with one out and a two-run lead. He finished that inning, but he went on to give up three runs of his own in the eighth to blow the lead. So we did not see Junis reserved for a potential save opportunity, which was an important step towards calling him the full-time closer in Texas. Now, last night could have been a good sign of Skip Shoemaker's hierarchy. Cole Wynn got the eighth inning with a three-run lead against Julio Rodriguez, Josh Naylor, and Randy Arozarena. Wynn got through that inning cleanly, but Texas scored two more to eliminate the save chance for the ninth. Jacob Latz finished it off against two of three left-handed batters. I don't know if Junis was warmed up for a possible save or if he had the night off after throwing 24 pitches on Thursday. But part of the reason I've spent a lot of time analyzing Texas is because I've thought there's a chance that a primary closer can emerge there. I think Cole Wynn would be the best pitcher for the job right now, but he's clearly being used as a high leverage fireman against the opposition's toughest hitters. That probably does leave Jacob Junis as the default closer on some nights, but we saw on Thursday that if Wynn isn't available for a fireman spot, Junis will fill that role too. So Texas right now, it looks more like a matchup based committee with Jacob Junis slightly ahead for saves, only because he's not the preferred fireman and he's frequently the guy who's still there in the ninth. All right. Well, that's the news and notes. Let's get to some drops. Most of these should be pretty obvious, but we'll start with if Edwin Diaz pitches this weekend and he looks mostly healthy and the velo and stuff are mostly normal, we can drop those shares of Tanner Scott, Alex Vesia, Blake Treinen, whoever you added in the Dodgers bullpen in case Diaz was actually hurt and was going to go on the IL. Now, anyone still holding Griffin Jacks? If there's a solid option on your waiver wire, go for it. You know, drop Jacks. Same with Brian Abreu. It doesn't matter how high you drafted them. At this point, they aren't closers and they aren't getting saves. Move on. If anyone's holding a Minnesota twin like Cole Sands or Taylor Rogers that you picked up early in the year, drop them. Add someone better. I would say the same about any of the Sacramento Athletics. Mark Leiter Jr. isn't their closer. Justin Sterner isn't worth a hold. Those guys are still rostered in a small amount of NFBC leagues. Maybe Joel Cunnell can be held or added to benches, but he's really just an emergency backup. And lastly, Ryan Stanek is still being held in 7% of the NFBC's online championship leagues. He should be at 0%. Riley O'Brien has a very firm grip on that job in St. Louis. But now for our ads, the waiver wire targets. Abner Uribe is available in 12% of the OC leagues, and he will absolutely be the largest addition of the week. He will garner the highest bids. I caution against large bids because I'm not certain that he's a locked-in full-time closer for the rest of the year. That's when you want to pay the premium. So 5 to 7% of budget, those kind of bids are about as high as I'd be willing to go, even on a team that needed saves. You know, that's about $50 to $75 in the NFBC. If you don't really need the saves, you can throw a keep him honest bid out there, but you know, 20, 30 bucks, you're probably not getting him. But if you don't need him, you know, don't spend the money. Now, Brian Baker in Tampa is almost universally owned at this point, but he is available in a handful of the NFBC OC, so go get him there. I don't see a full-time rest of season closer here either. So I'd like, you know, the 30 to 50 range, even though I think it would take more to get him. It really depends on how badly you need saves and if, you know, he'd be your second closer, maybe a luxury third guy to throw in there. Ben Brown of the Cubs is available in 95% of leagues. Caleb Thielbar, completely unknown, so he's available in 100%. I think those two are the most likely short-term beneficiaries of the Daniel Palencia injury. So we have to watch the Cubs this weekend. You know, save chance could tell us who to put the bids on. But either way, I would keep them reasonable, under 30, you know, preferably 10 to 15. I definitely lean towards Ben Brown just because he's right-handed. Usually those are the guys preferred for closer roles. Kirby Yates of the Angels started his rehab assignment last night. He's 77% available. Right now, he's just a couple dollar down ballot stash only. Possibly 1 to 2 weeks, 1 to 2 weeks from even potentially getting a save opportunity. And that depends on Jordan Romano's performance in that time. But, you know, sometimes those really sneaky, cheap ads a week or two ahead of time, they have a way of working out. Now, Bennett Souza of the Astros is in the same boat as Yates, but he should have a lower priority. You know, Yates has a clearer path to saves behind Jordan Romano than Souza would have against more options in the Astros bullpen. But I like the idea of stashing Souza in, you know, deeper leagues or where you really can hold him for a few weeks just to find out. Now, he's not available in the NFBC online championships where he wasn't drafted and dropped, which, I mean, he shouldn't have been anyway. But on other platforms where Souza's available in the player pool, just a stash. From the Astros, we can focus on adding Eniel De Los Santos. I don't know how many save chances he realistically gets moving forward, so I, again, caution against large bids. But like $10 to $30 in an NFBC league seems fair to find out. He's unrostered in OCs. Brian King is available in 45% of leagues. He could be a cheap ad as well from the Astros. If you're starting King, you know, you're maybe hoping to get one save out of him that week. I don't think he'd contribute any kind of high volume for saves. We're throwing darts in San Francisco right now if we're picking someone from that pen. Ryan Walker is available in 12% of leagues, but he'll probably be dropped in a lot more this weekend. Keaton Wynn's available 92%. Eric Miller 100%. He was unrostered. The only value there is to get the right guy cheaply. I just don't know if there's a right guy at the moment. So maybe Eric Miller around $5 would be fine. And lastly, Joel Cunnell in Sacramento is 77% available. I'm recommending staying away, but for a couple bucks, if you can get him that cheap, you know, why not, I guess. Maybe you can throw him in there in an emergency. So that will bring this Fab Preview episode of the Bullpen Report to a finish. This has been the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'll be back on Tuesday, but for now, let's close it out.